this is Pat Lynch, and this is As the World Turns or Burns, our podcast that is coming from deep in the heart of the Mabee Simpson Library at Lyon College. Joining me are
Kieran O'Keefe,
Brendan Connell,
and
producer Jason.
And today we're going to cover two things real quickly. One is ICE and kind of what is going on in Minnesota and around the country, and kind of where is this all headed? And second is just get back to, do we really have three branches of government, and is anything finally starting to emerge in terms of pushback against the against executive power from the presidency? And, you know, are we finally seeing that there's some guardrails? Who knows? Stay tuned. We'll cover it. But first, ICE. You know, Jason, you know, being from Minnesota, let's start with you. What, you know, what do you hear, like, as far as local media and all this? Because, you know, obviously, you know, we read about it on a you know, from the national perspective, but how's it being regarded from the people who actually live in the state?
Well, first off, it's a really sad time because the Star Tribune, which became the Minnesota Tribune, and then the Star Tribune again, just shut down like literally a month ago. So yeah, they're not printing that anymore. I'm sure they still have a digital newspaper, but yeah, there's no like big, massive physical newspaper like there was before, which is kind of sad because it's ironic that like all this happens as soon as like that happens. Also, NPR, Minnesota's public radio, has they're very popular. They have a really high social media presence with Minnesotans, and they have done everything to avoid talking about ICE, funny enough. So it's kind of questioning, like, from local news, like the local news, like WCCO is Minnesota's premier local news station. That's, it would be, I don't know, it's like a, I'm sure it's affiliated with CBS or somebody, but that's like the main big one, and they have blasted them. And funny enough, it's kind of crazy because there's all these local businesses and people that are going on WCCO, you know, during the weekly news segments, in the mornings and at night. And like, there was just I just read an article about a small toy, like they manufacture, or not manufacture, but they sell like board games, toys and stuff like that, for like kids of all ages and adults, I guess, because adults play board games. But they blasted and criticized the ICE stuff that was going on the street that was that they're located on national, or on television, on the news. And then ICE showed up and did an audit on them. And that's been happening a lot, is people who are getting criticizing them are being like actively seeked out. It's like almost like, it's really terrifying. And from like a local perspective, I mean, I'm not from Minneapolis, but being from Minnesota and being like, I've been to Minneapolis and I've spent a lot of time in Minneapolis, and it's really like, you always see this stuff. Like, I think about like when, like, you know, there was the Capitol riots and like everybody stormed the, you know, the building, and like, you see all this crazy stuff that happens, and even like the original like Minnesota riots during 2020, but like to actually see this like in places that you've been, in like streets that you've been on, at businesses you've been to, it's like really terrifying. It like, it just makes it like really surreal. It'd be like if ICE just like walked through Lyon College and just started like tearing people away from the dorms or something like that, you know. Like, is it going to happen? Probably not. But you guys could imagine it, because you guys live and breathe here every day, you know? And it's like, that's really terrifying. Like, it's really scary. And it just kind of like, I mean, I guess from my perspective, I'm also biased because I don't like Trump already, but like, it just seems very dictatorial. And it's like, I don't even understand how people can try to justify this. Like, even if there was like this big Somalian insurrection of like people laundering money and taking money and stealing money, and there's all these criminals, and Minnesota was like the worst city. Like, imagine if Minnesota was Gotham. I don't even know how you could imagine trying to justify something like this. So,
guys, any thoughts?
I mean, Trump's been itching to do this for a while, to really try to crack down, to try to like make an example of a particular place. He's itching to invoke the Insurrection Act. He wants to do that. I think eventually, I made this prediction last semester, but I think at some point He's going to try to suspend habeas corpus. I don't know what the situation is going to be, but I think he's going to try that eventually. Just it's too much in line with his behavior to this point for me to think that's not going to happen. So, I mean, it looks really bad. I don't think this is helping his popularity. I don't think the average American's looking at these images of ICE killing a woman or just beating up people, people on, you know, wearing masks, going around, going after random individuals. Or there's that one video I saw, which I thought was really bad, where an ICE agent is like, I don't think you're a citizen because you have an accent.
Yeah, right.
And we saw that. Yeah. There's that one. So I don't, that's not going to help Trump's, that's going to be one of those things that's not going to help Trump in the broad political environment, but his base is going to love it. They just love that stuff. And there are, you just see this again on social media, the people who are taking so much enjoyment out of watching ICE agents beat up and arrest people who you may or may not be guilty of anything. So,
which is sick, by the way.
It's disturbing and unfortunate, but I don't know. Like, it's part of like what's happened. I think I don't want to blame it all on social media, but I think with social media sort of tearing us apart in a way, sort of fragmenting the media environment, and in a way making us less connected than we had been previously, and in actual real connections, we just don't have the same kind of, I don't know. I mean, empathy is sometimes an overused word, but I think in some respects it's right. Not the same kind of empathy that we might have had a few years ago for something like this. It just, I don't know. I get you want to be tough on immigration. Okay. You think we need to have a firm border. Okay. That's fine. But I just have a hard time with people who are taking genuine enjoyment out of seeing, you know, mothers and fathers ripped out of their homes and thrown in detention. Like, why would that be? Why would you enjoy that? Unless they've done something wrong, if they committed a crime, okay, that's different. But if they haven't done that, like, why are you getting enjoyment out of that? And that I find to be very disturbing. But it's red meat for Trump's base. They love this stuff. And, you know, I think part of the reason Trump is targeting Minnesota, I think it's partly because Tim Walz is governor. And Walz ran the last election with Harris. And now he's an enemy of Trump. He always has been. But I think the fact he ran the election as Kamala's VP makes him more of a target. And the whole thing's very disappointing. This is, again, something Congress could try to rein in. They won't. And, you know, the solution for, I'd say two things. One is that not all of our problems in politics rotate around one thing, but I think many of the problems we have in politics rotate around the fact that a radical minority in both parties, but I think much more so in the Republican Party, have disproportionate influence over national policy because of the primary system and because of gerrymandering. And then I would say, too, you know, there is a solution to all of this. There's a solution to Venezuela. There's a solution to Greenland. There's a solution to using ICE to go after innocent Americans, American citizens in some cases. And that is impeachment. And at this point, I think Trump's done enough to be impeached. I think this would be easily justifiable, but it's that is the major check on Trump's power, and it's just not going to happen.
Thank you, Mitch McConnell. Yeah, that's kind of put all this in play. Anything, Brendan?
I don't have much to add. I mean, it is very scary because it seems like ICE is like almost this paramilitary force now. Yeah. I guess what I'll say is, I don't know, it's kind of emblematic of not just like how divided we are as a country, but I've always thought, like, if you put Trump's policies aside, he's just a terrible leader in that whatever he chooses to do, he not only doesn't care about the optics of it, he almost like goes out of his way to make the optics look terrible because somehow that caters to his base and like the keyboard warriors online. I mean, these ICE agents are going out. It almost just seems like they're just not accountable to anyone. They're just going out, they're masked people, and they'll just take whoever they want. And now you've got a situation where people are fearful of their own government.
Yeah.
Generally don't want that in a democracy, especially. So, you know, I study immigration. I would say I'm probably pretty middle of the aisle when it comes to immigration, in the sense that I do think that we need to have border control and we need to have something like ICE, because there's rule of law in this country, right? It's like there's legal ways to get here. I personally wish there was more of a legal avenue for people to come to the United States, but hey, there's not. And if you come to the country illegally, it's the possibility that you can be detained and then deported. But man, the way to go about it is just not what's been done over the past year. It's like, first off, like, make it clear that ICE is not this like politically motivated thing. If you're picking on certain states or you're picking on certain ethnicities, right? Use it in an impartial way. Use the judicial system. You're still giving these people, you know, due process, and they'll, you know, you're not just going to be deporting people because you think that they might be breaking the law. Optically, like, these ICE agents, they shouldn't look like people with just hoods on and masks on and they're just kidnapping people. Like, I would just go about this all differently. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's a middle part of the aisle that Americans could agree on. It's like, you could have strong borders, but you could also do it in a humane way. And it's honestly not even that hard to do.
Right.
All it takes is a good leader to realize this and to say, oh, here's a good policy. It's maybe a more conservative policy, but we're going to try to follow it. And I want to try to get people on the left on board too, to kind of understand the merits of this. But it, you know, this is not done in this presidency. So
the other thing too is two things. I think one thing that you said was really good is like, the problem is like these guys, they're kind of like almost like vigilantes in a way. Like they're like a paramilitary in a way, like exactly what you said. And that's concerning because that basically means that you just got these people just rolling around with guns and like equipment that is like meant to literally kill people. Like, and like also not saying that everybody who's in that position is just itching to kill people, but there are a lot of people who join types of groups like that or the military because they really have this like kind of like desire to, you know, cause harm or do bad things. Same with police, not all police, but there are a decent amount of police officers who feel like that are ICE agents. So they're just itching, you know, to cause some chaos or cause violence. And I think that is another issue, is just like allowing these people to just do that and also not holding them accountable, which kind of just makes the rest of them feel like it's almost okay to just be as violent. Like, think about the shooting of the woman in the car. That was, I mean, what, they're not going to even do they're not even going to like investigate it. Or whatever, right? They're not holding an investigation, which I think is just crazy, because I feel like even if it was like self-defense or whatever, you should still hold an investigation to try to, you know, try to sort out the facts of that
situation. Yeah, but an investigation would open it up for a discussion of, is there a right way, a moral way, a legal way for ICE to conduct itself, and they will not entertain that. There's just, you know, they don't want, this is, you know, they have in their own mind that mandate to go and I'll call it inflict, you know, it like as much fear into people as possible, because it's all about the spectacle, you know, the mask, the break-ins, you know, the paramilitary move, all the maneuvers, all of that is deliberate, and it's all about striking fear. And you know, the crazy thing is, and as far as a positive for Trump, immigration was one of his number one issues. He has basically closed off the border, you know, as far as the number of illegals, you know, that it was out of control, flat out of control under Biden. He's got that. He has that part of the problem solved. So, you know, there's a win, and all this has been completely overlooked because of his political targeting of going after Democrat states, California, Chicago, Minneapolis. Now he's going to, you know, the absolute, you know, where's the biggest problem where the most undocumented immigrants are right now? Maine. You know, I heard that's next. You know, of course. Where's he avoiding? What are the two red states that would be
Texas and Florida?
Exactly. Exactly. But they're gonna go untouched. He's exempted meatpacking. He's done a lot with, you know, he's, you know, all the industrial interests that have lobbied. So it's all politically motivated. It's all cruel. I mean, just even to me, when you have, you know, archbishops, you know, calling this out as far as the morality and, you know, and everything of it, you know, he'll just blow it off. Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, they're, that's just, you know, some whiny liberal. But, you know, it's really sad because in the end, it really does expose, you know, kind of America and who we are. You know, that, you know, Gary, like you said, there's a group of people that, as horrific as all of us in the studio see this, there's a group of people that really cheering this on.
Yeah.
Flat out. You know, that is something. And yeah, and you just have to come to terms with that there's things like that, that, you know, that there's going to be a part of this country that are people that, you know, frankly, it's hard to get, really understand just, you know, kind of the, you know, kind of their sense of morality when it comes to this.
It's not a huge part of the population. It's probably only, it's big enough. It's probably like, say 25-30%, yeah. But that's all it needs to
it's
be
scary.
Because they dominate the
right.
Republican Party.
Yeah.
Republican policy is really based around what that relatively small minority in the U.S. wants, because they can vote for, they dominate the Republican primary process. The Republican, whether the state or the federal level, their districts, if they're in very Republican districts, which, you know, most Republicans are, just because of gerrymandering, their constituents are overwhelmingly of that ilk.
Yeah.
And so they have an absurd amount of power relative to their fairly small part of the population. And that's where a lot of these problems come. Like if you could change the incentives, if you could make it so that politicians were more worried about, again, losing a general election than a primary, I just think so many of these problems would be much less of a problem.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it would go away, but you could solve this problem to a degree by somehow changing the way that problem that you have, you know, too much influence to a radical small minority.
Yeah. And part of it too, and Trump has made it so abundantly clear that he's running the country only for those that support him. You know, so it's like those that don't are the enemy. You know, I'm not being hyperbolic. Yeah, they are truly the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're at a civil war, you know, with them. And, you know, we're going to have to do everything we can to win this. And if it takes ICE and the tactics that they're using, that's unfortunately what we're going to have to do this. Suspend habeas corpus. You forced us into it. You know, that's just what we're doing. But this, I just see that they, you know, the villainization, you know, all the bully talk and demonization of the other side, this is where it ultimately ends, you know, in terms of that you what's the president supposed to be, the uniter? That is not his game. That's, you know, that, you know, just he's made it abundantly clear that he has no interest in doing that. And between the immunity and just basically the impossibility of getting impeached, you know, he's just running, just running full steam ahead.
Yeah, there's nothing he could do to be impeached, I don't think. Like, maybe if the economy completely collapsed or something, I don't know. It'd have to be something, an incredibly unusual
right.
situation for the public opinion to shift enough that it would be feasible to impeach. I mean, you could impeach him, but the conviction part. I actually think the chance of him being impeached if the Democrats take over the House is pretty good. I don't think it'll go anywhere in the Senate. But,
right.
He won't be removed from office, barring something very, very unusual. Although I think he should be. But yeah, I don't like being hyperbolic about it, but I do think he, more so than any president we've ever had, just doesn't care about appealing to all Americans. He just doesn't. He cares about that 30% that
right.
loves him, and he wants to win over just enough of the people who kind of will vote for him, but
right.
maybe don't love him necessarily. His approval rating's not great. It's 42%, but that's just enough to squeak out an election, which he's done twice. And he's kind of changed politics in a way, right? Prior to Trump, if you were going to win an election, you had to win by addition. And Trump has not really tried to add anybody. He's just tried to amp up his base with just emotional appeals that are really harmful, destructive, and in most cases based on some level of falsehood.
Yeah. Well, that's cheerful, but
what a depressing turn this podcast has taken.
But change the subject. As far as the, you know, are we seeing some glimmer of having three branches of government? This unitary executive theory, which is really what's been driving everything around giving Trump all of this power. There's things that are starting to emerge. We in a previous show talked about Greenland, that, you know, you have voices coming up now. A couple of them are brave only because of retirement, but nevertheless, there's some dissension. Obviously, a thing like, you know, the vote for the release of the Epstein files, you had kind of something that went, that the Republicans went against Trump, although you see where that all landed. What are we, about a month and a couple days and nothing has been released? But, so it goes. The Supreme Court, they're soon going to be ruling on tariffs. We could make a prediction whether that, you know, where they're going to land on that in a moment. But it seems, at least from the questions that they asked, that there seems to be a leaning that it, basically what he did was unconstitutional. Let's see where that goes. They had the hearing today about Lisa Cook, the governor, Fed governor that he's trying to remove from quote unquote mortgage fraud. And that is highly, highly questionable because there's no due process that they provided her. Tried to push out Jerome Powell by just basically, being a dick. He good for Jerome. He said, "Hold my beer," and he got on and did a video that just went completely viral, but basically just said, "Yeah, this is just politically motivated." So is it enough to kind of stop the muzzle velocity kind of change that the administration's pushing through? One could wish, but it's not. It's slowing it down from, I don't know, 100 miles an hour to 95. You know, not quite Sammy Hagar. I can't drive 55, but that's a whole other thing. But I'm hopeful. I think there's going to be things that eventually, somewhere, and I'll throw it to you guys, will there be that like McCarthyism moment? I forget who was the senator that just basically pushed back on McCarthy,
Chase Smith.
Yeah, you have no shame. That there's that, it's a void, you know, it's somebody that you just don't expect that will step up. Is that somewhere in the future, or am I just on edibles again?
Well, you know who has Margaret Chase's Smith seat is Susan Collins.
Yeah.
Susan Collins will do something. I don't know. I'm skeptical that Congress will do anything to really stop Trump unless Democrats win both houses back.
Yeah.
That's probably the best chance. I just don't see Republicans breaking with Trump. I just don't think it will happen. Like, unless there is some sort of massive economic catastrophe. His approval rating among Republicans is still very high. As long as that is the case, the Republicans in Congress are going to be too afraid to do anything against Trump to a substantial degree, unless they happen to be in a swing district or a swing state.
Got
Tom Tillis, Don Bacon, Lisa Murkowski, Alaska is ranked choice voting, even though it's more Republican state. Susan Collins in a blue state. Maybe you see a couple others defect at some point, but it's not going to be very many.
Right.
I just think the incentives are misaligned. I said this earlier, but as long as the incentives are misaligned, I don't think Republican behavior is going to substantially change, right, barring a complete collapse or at least something of a collapse of Trump support among Republicans. And I think really to see a change to any substantial degree with Republicans, his approval rating would have to drop, I think, at least into the mid-30s and maybe lower than that. Like right now, it's 42 is too high. You got to get down to, if you get down to like 32, then that means some Republicans aren't approving of him, and maybe then you have some more politicians who will break from him. But as long as he's popular with the base, they're not going to break. I just don't think it's going to happen. As long as his approval rating remains high with the core, it's just nothing's going to change, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't put a lot of faith in Congress. The courts have, I guess, still been working, so that's a good thing. But how long is that going to last? I mean, this is a president that eventually could just say, you know what, I'm just not going to listen to some of these orders or weasel out of them. And in which case, it's not like the courts have any enforcement power here. I think it then comes back to voters. I think this is something I said, you know, when we did our podcast last semester. I think it ultimately comes down to, are voters willing to push back enough if Trump keeps doing stuff like this? And, you know, on the one hand, I would say that, you know, Trump still doesn't have anywhere near a majority of voters that support him. And that's something that usually you need to just totally, you know, revert or to kind of draw back democracy. You'll notice that it's usually like very popular leaders that gain power, and then they could use all their popularity to just totally reshape the Constitution or just write a new one. Happens actually quite a bit in history. But again, I don't think Trump has that support yet. On the other hand, I just think that maybe a lot of voters just don't care about democracy and are just not paying attention to checks and balances, so he could just kind of get away with this at times. So, yeah, I guess I'm holding on hope. And of course, it's like, what, we've got 3 years to go, and then who knows what happens in 2028. Foreign policy is another thing that could maybe shake things up even in Congress. So maybe if there's like a major event or a war or something, that could maybe shake things up. And then maybe you've got Republicans that are willing to run the other way in mass. But I'm not holding my breath for that. I guess I know we're doing like predictions here, but what I'm willing to say now is, like, we don't have a democracy anymore. Like, I'm there now. And I don't want to exaggerate because, again, democracy, there's, like, shades of gray, right? There's, like, North Korea over here. Then there's, like, full-fledged democracy over here.
Yeah.
We used to be here. I don't think we're here anymore.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call us a democracy anymore. I've seen enough.
It's like an illiberal democracy that's in...
It's resembling, there's all different words and labels for this. It's resembling like almost a competitive authoritarianism where you have like democracy in place, but the executive is using the rules or ignoring the rules in a way to just kind of make it so that it's not a truly free and fair system with checks and balances. I don't want to get any visas revoked for myself or anything. So, but I've been to select countries.
Mm-hmm.
And Eastern Europe, I've seen kind of, or I've read up on the politics of those countries, of how they used to have democracy and no longer they don't have it anymore. Yeah. And so I know the tools that are often used by incumbent presidents or prime ministers. It's the same thing that's being done in the United States now. It's not a new playbook.
Oh, yeah. It's so, like he's been following Orban, you know, it seems, just kind of
hungry.
Check by check. Yeah. So, well, but that wasn't.
I didn't mean to take us in the depressing direction again.
I lit that candle, and then you guys just got you kind of snuffed it out.
How many of those countries have functioning judicial systems, though? Because I feel like that's still the one part that would make me not want to go that far to declare we're not a democracy. Long as the judiciary is working still, so as long as that's functioning, I'm kind of I haven't lost faith yet.
That is like a common denominator. Is usually like the courts just don't work, or they're just like packed with judges that are favorable toward the incumbent. So that is true. And that hasn't happened yet in the United States.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess, another optimistic way.
All right.
Yeah, the way Trump is behaving is totally an autocrat. He's pushing boundaries in ways that are extremely disturbing to me. But you look at Orban in Hungary. He packed the courts, did he not? Like, he just flooded the courts with his own appointees. Like, that was a key way he sees power. Yeah. And Trump hasn't been able to do that yet in the U.S. So I think, to me, the courts are kind of the last holdout for the time being. Because Congress just, not doing anything. The Democrats can take Congress back in the fall, trying to be optimistic. Then I think, maybe things will change. But ultimately, I think the way to save democracy, you have to defeat the MAGA movement. The MAGA movement is not democratic. Right. And if that is the main thrust of the Republican Party, and we have a two-party system, if one party goes bad, the system doesn't work, not indefinitely at least, because one party or the other, they're going to exchange power at different points. You have to have two functioning parties to have a democracy. Yeah. So I'm not to where we are in democracy yet, but I feel like the current path is not sustainable if we want to stay a democracy. We cannot be in the situation in another 6 years or something and I think still got be a democracy. Something's got to break, and hopefully break in a positive way.
I do predict the Democrats will win 2028, the presidency. I just think the pendulum will swing back the other way. People will say, I've had enough of Trump. Yeah. So I almost think, I mean, they should be careful who they pick for their candidate, but I almost think it's just pick a viable candidate.
Yeah.
I think they'll win. The question is, though, how much damage will happen in 3 years? We got one out of the way, but potentially a lot.
Well,
I think if the Democrats get back under the tower in 2028, they just have to do whatever they can to change as much of the system as possible to prevent this from happening again. Right. They just got to do something. They've got to, I go back to gerrymandering, that's kind of like a hobby horse, but pass a national bill getting rid of gerrymandering. If you have to break the filibuster to do it, do it.
Right.
I don't know, try to do something about money in politics. I don't know how that's going to work with the Supreme Court ruling, but try something. You got to just do as many reforms as possible. I don't even care about any other issue in the time after. Just make the reforms to make the country more resilient to a Trump-like figure in the future. And I think Trump is kind of unique because he has this cult of personality around him, which makes him especially dangerous, because that is what a lot of autocrats have, is some kind of cult of personality. And it looks buffoonish to people who don't like them. Like, Mussolini looked like a fool to a lot of people. He was up there pounding his chest and waving his hand around. But the fascists in Italy who liked him, he looked like a strong man, looked like a good leader. And that's the dichotomy with Trump, where half of Americans see him as this idiot, and maybe not half, but a good percentage of the rest think he looks like a strong leader who's doing good things for the U.S. So I think, I don't know if the next person will have that cult of personality, assuming Trump is not president in 2029, which I don't think will happen, but I'm not ruling it out yet either.
Yeah.
But I don't know if J.D. Vance can do that, the way that Trump can.
J.D. Vance has zero riz, man. that literally is going nowhere.
I heard way too many people in 2015 and 2016 say there's no way Trump can be elected. He's got nothing. He's got no shot. And I'll feel better when Trump's gone and there's somebody else there, the Republican leader of the party, who just can't do what Trump did.
Yeah.
When I see it, I'll feel better.
Part of it is also in terms of how to avoid us getting in a situation again is that call it post-Watergate, that the country operated on a lot of things that were norms, where it was just understood that this is how things are done and how things are not done. And that is basically, where, Trump just, he just disregarded all of that, and how many times you hear unprecedented and, never done before, because nobody ever went and just completely disregarded every accepted norm in the past. Now there's going to have to be things and it's going to have to be Congress, that's going to have to start setting some laws and some different boundaries so that this unitary executive just cannot decide that, Congress passes, appropriations and money's to be spent here, and the president just says, won't do it, and the list goes on and on and on, I think just having this thing about norms was nice and polite and kind of almost a relic of the past, and it's going to have to change.
That's a good point, because most people shoo off norms because they think it's, well, it's not written down rules, so you don't really have to follow them.
Yeah.
But I would argue that you absolutely need norms for government to work or society to work.
Sure.
Because you can't possibly write all the rules that you need or think about all the rules that you need on the spot. You need norms to structure things. So the fact that you have a person that's willing to just totally ignore it, well, of course, we're ending up now in just a very chaotic time because
nobody's going to push back. But well, all right, dramatic change of subject. We'll close on a thing. I kind of talked about, in Karen, I think you brought up predictions. Let's make one prediction, but it could be on anything.
Mm.
Anything.
Not political.
Anything.
It doesn't have to be political.
Anything. Yeah. I know where you're going already, dude. There's going to be no surprise there, but I'll let you go first
because
you're eager to tell the world your prediction.
I think the New England Patriots will win their 7th Super Bowl.
There you go.
And this will be the start of a new dynasty.
Yes.
And Drake May will be the next Tom Brady.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm only serious about the first part of that. The second part was more satire. No, but I do think the Pats will win the Super Bowl. I will make that prediction.
Yep.
So we'll see.
All right. You have anything?
I'll predict the Patriots to win on Sunday over the Broncos. Not a very risky prediction, but I feel like that's a bet I feel comfortable going with.
So you're really...
I appreciate
just going
that.
Right. Good. You're going right on.
I applaud that prediction.
Man, that is.
I'll say Patriots Seahawks is my prediction for the Super Bowl.
Okay. Well, all right. Those are both interesting, but but am I interesting? Answer, absolutely not. I'm going to predict that the Supreme Court will rule that the tariff policy as implemented is unconstitutional. And that the administration is going to have to go back and readdress just tariffs. And in doing that, it's going to be interesting because what tariffs really are to Trump is his leverage and the way to bully people. And that, if he doesn't have tariffs to threaten people, what really is happening? So you don't want to give me Greenland, I'll tariff you 10%. France, you don't want to join my board of peace, 200% on wine and champagne, whatever it is. All that is going to go away, and they'll creatively try to find some other way to tariff or get Congress to support them. But I think that the court, despite, it being a 6-3 court, is going to rule against that. Producer Jason, you have a prediction?
I think Florida is going to sink into the ocean at some point.
All right.
All right, Nostradamus.
put a timeline on it, at least. I think I'm going to die eventually.
Barring a catastrophic event, almost like the whatever that thing was in the 70s, I don't remember what it was, but it was when there was that plane that crashed with all that uranium and they thought it was gonna blow up and disintegrate North Carolina. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I know it was in the 50s, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there was something like that. So barring something like that, I could imagine any time from the next time the sun rises to...
Okay, so I have two sisters living there, so when should I give them a call right now?
Tell them to move to Minnesota and buy as much land as possible because the oceans are going to rise up and engulf all the coast. So.
A good insurance policy.
So if you want to make sure that you're going to have a lot of money in 25 years, there you go.
So if you're avoiding flooding in Florida, you want to go to the land of 1,000 lakes?
The land of 1,000 lakes because you can't go to California, you can't go to Seattle.
No, go to Greenland. This is why we need Greenland.
Even better.
Hey, you know what? It's a perfect time to get Greenland because as everything heats up, it's going to melt all those ice.
That's right. Yeah.
And we're going to have more land. We're going to have
beaches.
Oh, man, it'll be great.
I was going to ask about Greenland. Isn't there only 12,000 people that live
55.
There?
55.
Yeah, 55,000.
56,000, 57,000.
And there's only 90 something percent of the land's not even habitable, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, most of it's under a giant ice sheet. But What's interesting with Greenland, even if the population, it's pretty much all on the western coast of Greenland. There's almost nobody on the eastern coast because it's like way colder on the east just based on how the winds blow, I guess. So most of the cities are on the west part of Greenland, including Nuuk, which is the capital.
Nuuk.
Has like 22,000 people.
All right. Well,
great asset to acquire. There you go.
Well, there it is. That's a strong finish. So thank you for watching and listening as the world turns or burns. This is Pat Lynch saying goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And producer Jason.
Adios.
All right. And just keep listening, and we'll be back to you with another episode next week. All right. Take care. Bye.
This podcast is sponsored in part by Lion College and Kilt Studios. Thank you to Jonah Winter for the intro and outro music.